This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by hearing the rattle of mysterious objects in a kid's lunchbox. Mystery objects. Are they going to be smelly, dangerous, or just a couple of rocks? Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This is a review of the fourth episode of Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Here's your spoiler alert. If you haven't read the books in the Percy Jackson series by Rick Riordan or watched the TV adaptation, you have been warned. The fourth episode of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, I Plunge to My Death, adapts chapters 13 and most of 14 of The Lightning Thief by Rick Riordan. The series skips right on over chapter 12. The show starts with a flashback to a time before the book when Percy's mom is trying and failing to teach her kid to swim at a public pool. I have some unsolicited advice that has nothing to do with literature, but I used to be a swimming teacher and a lifeguard, and I can tell you right now that Percy's mom should have just paid someone else to teach her kid to swim. Don't bother with group lessons because your kid won't get enough one-on-one attention. Find another family with a kid who needs to learn to swim and go halvesies on private lessons. The kids will be way more comfortable learning together, and you get much better value for your money. The opening scene works well, though, and it'll pair nicely with the scene later in the episode. Things flash forward to where Percy and Annabeth are on board an Amtrak train. They're in a sleeper car, even though the book says they couldn't afford it. They have a chat about their abandonment issues. In the book, Annabeth's dad and stepmom are both pretty awful people who resent and reject her. The TV adaptation paints Annabeth's dad in a much more sympathetic light, but then falls back on the pretty tired trope of the wicked stepmother. I guess it is a Disney show after all. Still, it's an interesting conversation about the scars that come from parental rejection, and it explains Annabeth's orthodoxy when it comes to obeying the gods. She thinks she stands a better chance trying to please them than attempting to find love and acceptance among human beings. During the conversation, Annabeth plays with the gold ring strung on her bead necklace from camp. It's a nice little touch that fans of the books will notice, as the ring belongs to her father. The scene also very nicely shows how a good writer can naturally swing the mood from serious to funny. Percy and Annabeth haven't been talking quietly enough, and they wake up Grover, who apparently gets pretty cranky when he can't get his beauty rest. The kids head to the dining car where they go over their plan, and Percy makes a needless apology. I'm from L.A., and Percy, it is not a dumb question to ask how in the heck you're going to get around L.A. when you've never been to L.A. before and you're too young to drive a car. There's another slight change from the book here, as Echidna and her little baby Chimera attack them on the train rather than finding them later while they do some sightseeing in St. Louis. I think this is a good change. It gets the action going sooner, and it's more exciting if they flee the train rather than just leave it voluntarily because they have a 3-hour layover. I also don't mind the changes they made to Echidna. In the book, she's a dumpy lady dressed in denim from head to toe with bad teeth and beady eyes. As with Medusa, she doesn't waste too many words before getting down to the business of attacking Percy. The on-screen version of Echidna is prim and slim with a Chanel jacket. Unlike Echidna in the book, she's very talkative, but the jeans she wears does give a nod to the character's original appearance in The Lightning Thief. And as with the on-screen version of Medusa, the actor playing this episode's villain makes a big impact with only a little screen time. I like her look. She's all the more menacing because she looks like a harmless mom. Although it is a shame that losing the silly version of the character means we don't get to hear her ranting about how much she hates Australia. Echidna seems to take genuine pleasure in tormenting the kids before unleashing her chimera on them, which is able to disguise itself as a puppy. In the book, the dog is a Chihuahua, and it's a different breed in the show. It's hard to tell, but I think it might be a Papillon. Let me know if that's not right. Either way, it's totally hilarious when you know the big monster is coming down the rail car, and you're expecting to see this massive, fearsome beast, and then this cute little doggo goes trotting by. The kids bail from the train and book it over to the Gateway Arch. This part of the story is very realistic, as the arch is only a short walk from the St. Louis Amtrak station. St. Louis is lovely, by the way. You should visit sometime. And don't forget to try the frozen custard. Which is beautifully filmed. Annabeth explains that it's a temple to Athena, and that its architect, Eero Saarinen, is one of her children. This isn't in the book, but it's a nice, compatible addition to the world of Percy Jackson. There are some good, funny visual moments in the episode, like the smash cut to Annabeth and Grover trying to splash healing water onto Percy, and suddenly seeing cars flying through the street as Echidna and Chimera approach. We don't even properly see Chimera until the last possible moment, which is smart for two reasons. First, monsters are scarier when you don't see them, and the suspense is built up beautifully. And second, it helps the filmmakers save money on the special effects budget. The Chimera looks great and appears just as described in the book, except it hasn't got a rhinestone dog collar, which I think would have been nice to see. Parents and teachers watching along with kids can use this scene to inspire some art projects. Have students research the mythical Chimera from ancient Greek legends. The Chimera is made up of a combination of animal parts, and it has been interpreted differently in art through the centuries. She's a combination of a lion, a goat, and a snake, and she makes many appearances in paintings, mosaics, pottery, and sculptures. Have your kids draw their own version of Chimera. Let them draw her as scary or cute or mysterious, whatever they like. If your kids enjoy this assignment, have them then come up with their own fantastical creature made up of different animal parts, complete with a cool name. I'd love to see any of the pictures that they draw. Percy's luck runs out in this fight. He's hopelessly unable to compete with such a powerful monster, and during the fight at the top of the gateway arch, a hole is blown in the structure. This is where a huge and very bad change happens to the story. In the novel, Percy reaches a low point. He's been poisoned by Chimera's venom, and he knows he's dying. Echidna mocks him for being faithless to the gods. In this moment, Percy places his last trust in his father and leaps out of the gateway arch into the waters of the Mississippi River, pleading for Poseidon's help. It's a literal, actual leap of faith. In the show, Percy just gets knocked down and he falls. There's no choice, no change of heart, and no cry out to the father that he claimed to have rejected. I can see why the writers would have written this part out. Faith isn't trendy these days, especially in Hollywood writers' rooms. But this scene should not be viewed from the perspective of modern religion. This isn't necessarily about praying in the Christian sense or faith in the religious sense, although it absolutely works if you want to see it that way. This scene is about Percy choosing to accept the truth of who he is and actually committing to the quest he's on. In order to ask his father for help, he has to acknowledge who his father is. He's finally accepted what it meant when Poseidon sent the image of the trident to hover above him that day at camp. I don't think they should have changed this part of the story, because it's a very key moment in Percy's character arc. Either way, Percy falls from the arch and then finds himself somehow alive and breathing at the filthy, muddy bottom of the Mississippi. And this is proof that he does have the power of the gods on his side, because my goodness, would that water be disgusting. In the closing scene, a Nereid, or water spirit, comes to him with a message of encouragement and advice from Poseidon. When I rate on-screen adaptations of children's books, I'm not judging how good the show was or whether or not I liked it. I thought this episode was very good, and I liked it a lot. But my rating of 1 to 5 Snapes is based on how faithfully the film or TV show adapted the literary source. So while I love this episode, especially the gorgeous cinematography that showed off the heart of America and one of its loveliest landmarks, I have to give this episode only 2 Snapes for its huge departure from the source material. An entire chapter of The Lightning Thief has been omitted from the show, and the villain of the week, Echidna, bore little resemblance to the original character in the novel. Annabeth's dad has been changed from a jerk to a nice guy, hugely affecting her backstory and perpetuating the sexist trope of the wicked stepmother. The change to make Percy fall rather than jump from the top of the gateway arch was worth a deduction of 1 entire Snape all on its own. So what did you think of the episode? Are you watching along with your classmates or family members? What was your favorite or least favorite part? Let me know. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.